knew she would. In the instant her eyes were averted, he surged forward, grabbed the spear in both hands. Pulling, lifting, he pivoted and heaved the maiden into the air. He revolved once, and her grip came loose. Tossed, she hit the ground. Oates, still in possession of the spear, snapped the shaft over his knee. At least he tried. It was his leg that felt closer to breaking. He frowned at the weapon, at the featureless wooden shaft. It was oddly hot. A howl burst from his lips as the spear ignited. He gnashed his teeth against the pain of the licking flames, resisted the need to drop it long enough to cast it over the wall. He'd no doubt it would return. He only hoped he could kill the maiden before it was back in her hand. Flexing his burned hand, he charged, smashed his uninjured fist into her nose as she was rising. The blow sickened him, his vision shrinking to the woman's face. Without the spear, the armor, she looked only a few years beyond her girlhood. Hers was the face of the maidens of Winsome in better days when the town still stood. A face that should suffer no more than a sunburn while tending an orchard flush with fruit. It was a face to be protected, cherished, not battered by the hard, cruel knuckles of a desperate thrice-blood. Feeling this in his churning gut, Oates kept hitting her. He broke her nose, teeth, even the shaft of the stockbow bolt. He turned the flesh around her eyes to puffy mush. He was wailing now, spit and tears falling with every punch as he erased the source of his torment. And damn him, beneath the distaste rising to sour his tongue, he found enjoyment. The maiden may have been a corpse before, but Oates didn't stop hitting her until she looked the part. Limp. Broken. Still. Recoiling from his grisly labor, Oates stumbled away from his murderous work on wobbly legs. He was panting, a short growl riding on each breath. Both his hands hurt.
Breach! West! Breach!
Oates whirled toward the cry. It was Dry Gulch, yelling, standing with the other mongrels at the southern strong point. Thrums abandoned for slicers, they fended off cavaleros coming over the wall. Oates saw at least a dozen on foot crest the pile of logs and stone. He cast about for his tulwar, saw the situation to the north was little better. Anvil led the defense of the partially collapsed wall, keeping the cavaleros from breaking through with the aid of Thune and a handful of half-orcs. Retrieving his blade, Oates ran to the south. He watched Pommel take a lance in the neck before he could cross the distance. Four men came scrambling over to fill the gap left by the slain mongrel. Only one remained on the wall. The other three dropped down into the interior. Oates rushed straight at them, stuck a finger and thumb in his mouth, gave a whistle. That drew their attention. One cavalero had retained his lance, the others held swords. They all braced for the attack, the lance wielder leveling his weapon. Oates screamed at the top of his voice and raised his tulwar high over his head, whirling it in great circles. It was a furious display, one that kept the frails so fixated on him, they never saw Ugfok coming. The hog hit the men from the left, tusks and hooves churning them into a pile of broken bones and trampled meat with such speed they didn't even cry out.
"Good boy, Ug," Oates said, hopping to the wall.
He stabbed one frail in the groin on the ascent, seized the ankle of another, and ripped him off the wall. Ug gave an excited squeal when the man hit the ground. Oates climbed into the gap he'd made just in time to split the face of a man coming over the barricade. The sight of the hillside beyond froze Oates where he stood.
Hells take us.
The slope was flooded with horses and men. Many dead, even more alive. The orc's wall was bolstered by a mound of the slain. Oates had gazed down at these men all day, knew their numbers, knew they'd pay buckets of blood if they attacked, and hoped that his hoof might hold out. Now the moment was upon him, and the nagging specks in the field below had grown into a moving mass of reckless, hungry bloodlust. He felt a fool for ever believing his mongrels could survive, cursed the frails for fools for continuing to slaughter themselves.
The hoof had killed dozens, scores. The heap of skulls was earning its name for a second time, and yet the cavaleros would not cease. They swam against a current of thrumbolts and berserk horses, boulders and blood, dead and dying comrades. Also, they could reach the wall and kill the ash-colored rebels, a tenth of their number. Along the stretch of slope beneath Oates's eyes, the men were climbing quicker now, spared the withering volleys thanks to their fellows engaging the defenders up close. Oates knew his brothers here had only moments to throw the cavaleros back, or the strong point would be overrun and the entire hilltop flooded with frails. He cut a man down to his right, leaned and hacked the fingers off another below. The maimed man fell screaming into those coming up behind. On the left, Mope was closest, bleeding from several cuts to his arms and face, his own blade slinging blood with every stroke. Beyond him, Batshit held a snapped tulwar, hurling furious insults and the helmets of dead cavaleros at the scalers. Worth a Damn was on the right, along with Jacintho and three of his ruffians armed with spears. The shard with the forgotten name was on the outer side of the wall, lying tangled with the other corpses. Cursed ass? No. What the fuck was it? The cavaleros didn't give him time to figure it out. It was a queer thing, seeing men so eager to reach the wall where half-orcs awaited them on higher ground, ready for the butchery. Perhaps after the long climb, the hail of bolts, the sight of so many dying around them, the wall didn't seem all that threatening. Or perhaps they'd been driven mad by the simple fact that they were still alive. Within that hideous barrier, they found some strange sense that this would all end if they could but reach it. Oates didn't know what drove them. He'd prefer they turn tail and flee, but they had the scent of death in their nostrils. Theirs or their foes, that's all they knew now. He gave them what they sought. Oates cleaved men, kicked them, shoved them, picked up their fallen lances, and threw them into the faces of their comrades. He stabbed, beat, bled. He slew. And still they came, on and on. Until one man didn't. He was scrambling up the slope among the dozens, stepping on bodies more often than ground. Oates watched him come, saw the moment he looked up. Their eyes met. Oates could have spit and hit him in the forehead. The frail's fixed, blind resolve faltered, melted away. He saw his end in the hulking thrice above. Oates made certain he saw it. A small, childish whimper escaped from the cavalero. He took a tiny, tripping step in no real direction, which seemed to startle him. The next moment, he was crawling backward down the slope, too afraid to turn his back. Batshit was the first to yell, whooping in victory. The one man started an avalanche. All the grit drained out of the frails and dragged them down the slope. Oates wanted to add his voice to the cheers, but his tongue was a tanned hide. He didn't have the breath. From the southern strong point, Thresher did.
Breach!
Oates's heart fell and nearly took him to his knees. He turned, saw Thresh and her crew battling against a rising tide, a wave of men that threatened to break them. He had to go. Someone had to go. He had to go. Oates snatched a look down the slope, made sure the frails on the western hillside were truly done. They were still running. He could spare some mongrels from here. Mope, you and... The spear burst through Oates's chest. He rocked forward, almost lost his footing, would have pitched face first over the wall if he had. But it hadn't been much of an impact. He looked down, saw the entire head of the spear and a hand's length of shaft sticking out of his right breast. Fucking queer sight. Sharp. Fast. He reckoned that was why it hadn't knocked him over. Was that also why there was no pain? He reached with his left hand, considered pulling it out, but his hand seemed hesitant, confused. It sort of floated there, dallying, making small, false grabs. Oates felt drunk, faint. The spear jerked him off the wall, and the pain arrived. Screaming, he didn't fall. He flew,
weightless in a world of agony. He struck the ground, nearly blacked out. The ground raked him. He was being dragged, a huge fish on a line. But the hook was a spear, and the line was the invisible pull of a god. He heard a familiar squeal. Well, not all that familiar, because Ugg was rarely afraid. Oates forced his eyes to focus, saw the big hog beside him, keeping pace with the torturous tug of the spear. Oates tried to tell him to get away, couldn't speak. His jaw was seized shut. Wouldn't have worked anyway. No command would force Ugfuck from his side. That loyalty was often the death of hogs. At least Oates wouldn't have to watch. The maiden's spear was going to kill him first. He saw her through boiling tears, standing, waiting as the spear and her catch returned to her. Perhaps someone would see, come to help. Maybe Thune. No. The giant was keeping the frails out, Oates saw as he skidded across the hilltop. Saw the hopelessness of that fight. Of every fight. The wall held more frails than mongrels now. They were coming over. In. He came to a stop at the maiden's feet, the pain of halting somehow worse than being dragged. Ugg bumped him with his snout, grunted at him to get up. Oates didn't have the strength to push him away. None of his limbs had feeling. He'd come to rest on his side, could feel the pressure of the spear shaft behind him pushing into the ground. The maiden took a sidestep, came into his view. She fixed him with the eye not swollen shut, the rest of her face a discolored horror. As he'd done with the cavalero on the slope, she made certain he knew his end was coming. He appreciated being too weak to do anything about it. The maiden reached for the spear shaft. This was going to hurt, but it wouldn't last long. Oates kept his stare fixed on her face, and so he saw the winged shadow burst through the haze in the sky above. The roke shrieked as it dove, snatching the maiden's attention. She looked up in time to see the figure leap from the great bird's back, but she wouldn't be able to see who it was. Oates couldn't either, but still, he knew. The chief had arrived. Chapter 7. Fetching smote the ground, came charging out of the kicked-up dust, barehanded and furious. She would have seen Oates from the air, he knew. Her sharp eyes were better than they'd ever been. Eyes that were now screaming with the rage her throat kept silent. She came running, and the maiden spear braced, trusting in her armor, fooled by the chief's lack of weapons. Oates didn't know if the woman was dead or not, but she was about to be. Fetching struck the maiden with all the force and savagery of a riled hog, with none of the grace. Armor plates rattled as she slammed into the woman. Her momentum carried them from Oates's view. His upended periphery didn't provide much but a sliver of the wall. Still, it was enough to make out the roke swooping to knock cavaleros from the top of the barricade, seizing a pair of unfortunate men in its large talons before climbing into the sky once more. Oates watched the great raptor release the helpless men in flight. Their limbs whirled as they fell, their screams higher pitched than those of the terrified men still on the ground. The roke was banking for another pass, but Oates felt an engulfing sleep rising from the back of his skull, coming forward to drag his eyelids and his senses down into darkness. Ugfuck squealed at him from some deep pit. Oates tried to move so he could go to his hog, pull him out, but his body would not respond. He was in the pit, not Ugg, and sinking deeper. Blind now, he felt Ugg's cold snout, a shrinking mote of life in the black, drowning slaver of oblivion. The spear jerked him from the lulling waters, back to light and excruciation. The weapon pulled free from his body with such violence it flipped him onto his face. Teeth clenched so tight, Oates could do nothing but sob into the ground and wish to die. Ugg saved him from being smothered by the dirt, rolling him over so he could bleed to death instead.
It wouldn't take long. Oates was already shivering, the quakes a disquieting mixture of pain and panic. At least the chief was here. She'd see to it the survivors made it home. The shivers ebbed. Ugfuck's head blocked the sky, complaining, insistent that Oates rise. He couldn't. Couldn't even lift an arm to ward off the dripping stench of the hog's snout. Hells, the barbarian truly was hideous. Oates hoped he smiled. He certainly tried, but his body felt dull, detached. With a clipped squeal, Ugfuck was pushed from view. There weren't many that the hog would yield to willingly. He was replaced by a far prettier face. Prettier than any mongrel had a right to be.
Oates! Jackal yelled, slapping his cheeks. Wake up! No, brother, you're not doing this! Damn it, look at me!
Oates was looking at him. How come he couldn't see that? The swats were relentless.
Focus, brother! Need you with me! You're not dying on this fucking hill!
Jackal was wrong. Oates had already determined this was exactly where he would die. He'd made his peace. But somehow, seeing the fact contort his friend's face put a cold dread in his chest. Or maybe that was the spear hole. That hog shit, god-enchanted, backstabbing spear. Oates growled. Jackal grinned.
There you are.
He snatched a sash from his garb, the desert robes he'd adopted in the east and refused to put aside. Holding the ends, he whipped it into a roll.
Bite down, he instructed, holding the roll to Oates's lips.
Oates did as he was told, not loving where this was headed. Jackal drew a vial from his pouch, pulled the cork, and poured a syrupy substance into the wound. Oates thought the stuff was black, but as it stretched and caught the light, he saw it was a dark emerald. He tensed for the pain, but none came. Jackal already had another vessel in his hand, this one a jar. He dumped silver powder into his cupped palm. Using his hand as a funnel, he deftly let the powder follow the ichor. The wound began to itch something awful. Jackal did the next part so fast, Oates didn't see the third ingredient, only the flame that burst from the hole in his chest. The burning agony engulfed his entire body. Oates screamed through the cloth in his mouth, hot tears running into his ear canals as he convulsed. Jackal held his arms down to keep him from tearing at the smoldering flesh. When the worst subsided, Oates had the smell of his own cooked meat in his nostrils. Jackal removed the sash, gave him some water. Oates choked on the first swallow, but got the next one down. The sounds of fighting were all around. Oates shoved some words onto his tongue.
Get me up.
Jackal grabbed his shoulders, lifted him until he was sitting up. I don't think you should try to stand
up.
It hurt. It fucking hurt. But Jack hauled him to his feet. Ugfuck huddled up on his other side, used his bulk to keep him propped. Oates leaned against the pig and swept the barricade with the eyes of a drunkard. Thresh and the boys to the south were holding, bolstered by the murderous dives of the roke. Not one frail had come through the sag in the north, thanks to Thune and Anvil. The fighting was thickest at the eastern strong point.
Jack,
Oates croaked, and lifted his chin at the wall. Jackal nodded and rushed to aid the defenses. He must have flown in with the chief, though Oates hadn't seen him dismount. Of course, he couldn't just jump down the way she could. Or maybe he could. Hells, Oates didn't know anymore. Jackal could certainly throw himself into most any danger without fear. He entered the fray atop the wall, cut down four frails, and dropped to the other side, out of sight. The cavaleros attacking the eastern slope were now discovering the terror of a mongrel that was a devil with a sword, cunning as the son of a snake and fox, his wounds knitting quicker than they could be inflicted. The frails may have brought Magritta's chosen to this fight, but now they faced the arm of Atukan. Poor fox. As for the maiden spear, Oates turned his gaze to the one foe who stood within the walls.
The woman had lasted longer than he expected, but it was nearly over. Her armor was dented in a dozen places, the work of Fetch's fists. The chief herself was bleeding from several small cuts and punctures, something Oates had thought was no longer possible. Reckon all it took was a weapon blessed by a goddess. Still wasn't enough. The maiden was reeling, spear held limp and useless in her hand. Fetch's punches were endless, crunching the steel plate. She avoided hitting the woman in her exposed, unprotected head. It took Oates a moment to realize why. The chief wasn't trying to kill the maiden. She was punishing her. Again and again, her knuckles pounded metal, sending the woman stumbling, only to be redirected by the next strike. Fetch was savoring this kill. She thought it was vengeance. Oates could do nothing more than stand, and barely that, as he waited for the chief to see he wasn't dead. It was a few more moments, a score more resounding blows, before she did. Fetch halted her onslaught, relief smoothing the wrath in her face. The maiden spear used the opening to thrust. Fetching had been distracted, eyes averted from the attack, yet still she twisted, seized the spear just below the head, and yanked it from the woman's grasp. Fetch had the same notion Oates did, to snap the haft. Only she succeeded, and didn't need her knee. With a downward jerk, Fetch broke the weapon in two. Flames spewed from the sundered wood, licked up her arms, but the chief's flesh was not burned. She cast the blazing pieces aside with a sneer of contempt. Seeing this, the maiden spear collapsed to her knees, the strength and the will to fight visibly fleeing her body as the fire guttered to smoke. Her remaining eye looked up at Fetching, bewildered. She knelt, slumped, and slack-jawed. Oates didn't hold with religion, but he knew what faith in a strong leader was. He watched that faith abandon the maiden spear, as obvious and elusive a sight as life leaving a body. Lost, betrayed, she beheld the mongrel who broke her. Her lips moved. She said something Oates couldn't hear over the tumult of the battle on the wall, but it looked to be a single word. Whatever she spoke, it was said with her last breath. Her eye rolled to white, and she pitched over onto the earth, the finely wrought armor, nothing now but a jumble of battered scrap lying on the hilltop. Fetch didn't waste time basking. She picked up the body and went to the sag in the wall. The defenders holding the breach fought harder as she climbed the pile of fallen debris and hoisted the maiden over her head. She stood there for a moment, allowing the frails to see the ruin made of their holy warrior before casting the corpse over the wall. Oates couldn't see the cavaleros beyond the barricade, but he saw the mongrels cease fighting, saw Anvil tell Thune something that caused him not to hurl the boulder in his hands. A moment later, a cheer went up from the defenders.
"Save your breath," Fetch barked. "Send them off with bolts. You heard me. Feather their backs."
Thrums began snapping and fleeing men began dying. Oates was grateful he was spared the sight. Fetch came off the barricade.
"Anvil, Thune, with me."
Thrice and Cyclops followed the chief, bypassing Oates as they hurried across the hilltop. With Jackal at the east and the Roke at the south, the only strong point still unsupported was the west. The cavaleros Oates had helped repel must have regrouped and found the courage for another assault. The chief was yelling at the men and mongrels along the wall there, commanding them to leave the defenses. Jacinto and his bandits were eager to obey, but the half-orcs were reluctant.
"Unless you want to die, get the fuck down,"
Fetching hollered. The wall was clear of defenders by the time she reached its base.
"Tell him to help me," Fetch said to Anvil, pointing at Thune.
The chief squatted, worked her hands beneath the massive log at the bottom of the barricade. Thune did the same a few strides away. Together, they started lifting. Cavaleros were coming over the top of the abandoned wall, but their advance was arrested as the rude construction began to rise. Men cried out, the wall coming apart beneath their feet. Many fell backward, others scrambling to flee the way they'd come. Straining, straightening, Fetch and Thune tipped the orc's barricade over, sending an avalanche of logs and rocks crashing down the hillside. None of the men in its path would have been swift enough to escape. By the time the echoes of the destruction faded, Jackal and Thresh were signaling victory from their strong points. The frails were all slain or turned tail. It wasn't enough, not for the chief.
Mongrels, mount up!
Riders ran to their hogs, assembling swiftly in the center of the hilltop. When all were in the saddle, Jackal swung up on an unclaimed barbarian. Hardbrow's animal, Oates saw. He hadn't seen the mongrel die, but Hells knew how many they'd lost.
Ride them all down, Fetch commanded.
Jackal led the hoof out the ragged hole she'd created. Oates counted the remaining hogs, those left behind because their riders were dead or too injured to straddle the razor. 19. Nearly half their numbers. It would have been all of them before much longer. Lasting until nightfall had been a fool-ass hope.
You should sit down before you fall down.
Jacinto, though Oates didn't turn to look at him.
Truly, the bandit insisted. I won't try to catch you, and from that height, your head will not thank you for the drop.
Oates increased his grip on Ugg's saddle horn and stayed where he was.
Any of your men survive?
4, perhaps 5. Gonzalo's wounds are... Well, time will make the tally.
Oates did not respond. He was watching the chief. She stood within the churned earth of the empty remuda, still and tense, as if deep in thought. Oates knew better. She was communing with the roque, guiding it, commanding it. When last he saw her, she hadn't yet mastered the trick of seeing through the bird's eyes. Looking at her now, he was certain she had. None of the cavaleros would escape. The roque would lead Jackal to any who had gone to ground. Movement beyond the chief drew Oates's eye. He let out a heavy breath of relief. Rant and roar were coming down off the barricade, supporting each other. Both were wounded, that much was plain. How badly, Oates couldn't tell, but they were alive. Rant still had the spear she was given and used it to support their descent. Soon as they reached the ground, they slumped down, resting against the wall and each other. Rant's hand came up to settle on her brother's face, an assurance, for both of them, that their ordeal was over. Oates hoped she was right. He also hoped that one day he would receive the same touch, the same assurance, from his sister. As Fetching strode toward him, he knew it wouldn't be today. Unlike Jackal, she still dressed like a hoof rider, though Hells knew she didn't need a brigand for protection. She was hiding behind an unchanged appearance, showing the mongrels she led that she was one of them. Oates didn't reckon it was fooling anyone. She never wore a sword these days, preferring the strange fist knives given by Tarif, weapons she had not even bothered to draw to fight the maiden. Fetch stopped an arm's length away from Oates, but they only shared a glance before her eyes drifted away. She pretended to take in the hilltop, took a long breath.
This was a cunt hair from a disaster, Oates.
He kept his mouth shut.
What were you thinking?
Fetch asked, still not able to look at him. Jacinto took a careful step forward.
We learned that...
Did I ask you?
The chief said, voice flat. Jacinto held up placating hands, rocked his step back. Fetch jerked a thumb at him.
Go see what can be done for the wounded.
As the man walked away, Fetch shook her head. Oates could see the corner of her lip turned down.
He reminds me of a dog's cock, she muttered. Thin, pink, and shiny. Only pokes out when it wants something.
Oates didn't waste his breath in the bandit's defense. Jacinto had proven himself a worthy ally time and again, but there was no getting past Fetch's distaste. She didn't approve of Oates's silence either.
Well, you got an answer for me?
Got word the Thresh and Slug had been taken. Came to get him.
I learned that news at the pit, Oates. My question is, what were you thinking, standing against the Frails on their own soil?
No choice.
You could have kept riding. You should have kept riding, not trapped yourself and given them the chance to surround you.
Again, he said nothing. She weren't wrong, but she was looking at a cat that had already scratched. Oates didn't much feel like voicing either point, though. He asked his own question instead.
Why'd you come up to the pit?
Fetch looked at him, managed to endure it for a few heartbeats before turning away again.
Doesn't matter now.
Reckon it does. You brought Jack. Has to be something.
Fetch exhaled, looked down at her boots.
Where's Barsius? I was told he came with you.
The mention of the halfling muddled Oates.
He was part of the plan. He and his tunnel boys helped get us out of Ellerina. They'll meet us back in the mountains. Why?
He still think you know where Jrika is?
Fetch hit him with the question first, her eyes next. Oates nodded.
Shit at hiding it, too.
Did you tell him?
Did I? Fetch. Can't tell what I don't fucking know.
It came out with every last grain of the bitterness he'd tried to hide.
You've been looking?
I've been in the damn smelteds where you sent me, again, and you know it.
You've been asking, Fetch said, a fire stoking in her voice. Hiding it, but you've sent word with every merchant and nomad that will listen that you're looking for Eva, a favored whore from Sancho's, that you want to know where she is and need to talk. Trouble is, that's a woman we both know to be dead. Figure since you told Jrika about every shit you ever took, it's a message she'd know is for her.
Sounds like Zirko's not the only one got a spy nested with me.
Only spying if the deeds are hidden, Fetch replied, sounding bitter herself now. I'm given reports by those loyal to me. You used to know something about that.
Oates felt the pain and fatigue boil away.
I should knock you on your damn ass. Loyalty? How about fucking trust, Issa? I haven't had yours for miles now, or you would have told me where she's hidden from the kick.
We going to chew this leather again?
Fetch pointed rapidly at her chest.
I know, Oates. Me. That's it. Not Jackal, not you, no one. Hells, you still refuse to hear. I was trying to make damn certain if Zirko got desperate enough to hurt us, he could only come after me. I was trying to protect you.
Protect me? It's a war, Fetch. One you force Zirko to help you fight, with Jrika as the threat if he didn't. And they are helping. Barsius
is sniffing you for Jrika's scent. Our alliance with Strava will end the moment they find her.
Then your plan is safe, Chief, because I got no notion where she is. Your tactics are working.
Fetch's jaw bulged. He'd riled her. Done it on purpose, too. She scratched at the shaved sides of her head beneath the tine plume. Took a breath.
No, Oates, they're not. We think Zirko may be closing in on her.
Oates went cold. Since he and Jrika had met in the pit, he'd known how fervently she wanted to avoid ever going near Strava again. He'd not known why until later.
How? He managed.
I don't know, Fetch replied. Not even certain I'm right. All I know is that she's gone silent. Haven't heard from her in a month.
Then get on your damn bird and go see.
You think I haven't? She's not where she should be.
And where's that?
The shameless, silent way she looked at him, refusing to answer, made him want to chew rocks. Or force-feed them to her.
I don't know where she is, he said through grinding teeth. Neither does Barsius, else he wouldn't still be around, would he?
Fetch shook her head.
No. No, I don't think so. But that's what I needed to know. Why I came...
Oates saw all the little clues, blatant because she tried to conceal them.
You're lying.
Fetch's face softened.
I am.
Trying to protect me some more. Don't. Fetch accepted that with a nod.
We need to find Zrika. A reunion between Zirko and his god can only spell shit for the lots. If Bellico destroys Strava out of vengeance, we lose the Unyars, and they're the largest force among us. If it goes the other way, and Zirko wrests control of the master slave from Zrika, he'll be powerful enough to oppose us.
Us, Oates echoed. You mean you and Jackal?
To start. But that priest may seek a reckoning against all the hoofs. He may even side with Hisparatha. That happens, and we've lost. So we have to find her, keep her safe. I came because I knew you'd want to help, but...
But fucking nothing. I'm coming. Fetch took a step closer, lowered her voice, though the intensity grew.
Oates, look at you. You can't go riding across Ulwundulas on a hunt like this. The first day would put you in the ground.
You may be stronger than all of us now, Fetch, but that don't make me weak.
Weak? Jacintho could knock you over with one arm right now. You've never been weak, Oates, but you've never been this close to dying either. You need time to heal, and this can't wait.
Neither can this war. Winter's over. The passes are thawing. The frails will be marching in numbers we ain't yet seen. Seems to me you'll be needed.
We need to find her quick, Fetch agreed. Jackal may have to shoulder the search alone if we don't.
The arm of I choke on cock? You forgotten where he got that power? Zirko starts yanking on his magic arm bone again, and Jackal will be helping him find Zrika, not us.
Jack's free of Zirko now, and you know it.
Still a risk. Better if I go.
The only place you're going is the Castile.
Like hell's.
Fetch leaned in. I'm not asking. There is no one at the pit that can tend you, not like the Zahracenes. You go back to the mountains, your injuries will fester, and you'll die. You go searching for Zrika, you'll die. You don't have my permission to kill yourself, understand? You have to recover, Oates. I'm not giving you a fucking choice.
All he could do was let his silence agree. Fetch turned to go. To check on the wounded, most likely, or just to be away from him. What did she say? Oates called after her.
Say?
Fetching stopped, turned around.
Who?
The frail with the spear. At the end. Fetch squinted at the ground, fished the detail from her memory.
Devil. She called me a devil.
They burned their dead on the hilltop. Tuskers, sons, nomads, shards. They all became the same smoke. Languishing with the other injured, Oates hadn't been able to help construct the pyre. Rant and Roar volunteered, but the others wouldn't allow it. This was a task for sworn brethren. Anvil had to forbid Thune from aping her as she dragged wood from the wall to the pile. Both Jackal and Fetch labored alongside the riders until the pyre was big enough for all the bodies. When Thresher brought the torch to Fetching, Oates got to his feet, though he needed help from Roar and Sluggard. Jackal skirted the rear of the gathering to stand beside him. The chief held the brand for a long while, staring at the dead. At last, she turned.
I'm wondering if this was worth it, she began. Some of you likely are, too. Perhaps you're not wondering. You've decided it wasn't. But this was too high a price to pay to save four.
Sluggard shifted uncomfortably. Oates glanced at Rant and Roar to find both siblings looking at him. He gave them a reassuring nod and turned his attention back to the chief.
If you have a hoof brother laying up here, one you came up with in the slops, or a newer bond forged since we started riding together, I reckon it's hard not to believe this was a waste.
Fetch paused and locked eyes with every last one of those before her. Oates was last, and the next two words were delivered directly at him.
You're wrong. Today, on this hill, we showed Hisparatha that they can kill us, but they cannot cage us.
We showed them that we will accept death before we will return to chains. We showed them that we will come for our own and slay armies to liberate a handful. Remember that. The Frails will. After they find this hill and their hundreds of unburied dead, they won't ever be able to forget. Now let's send our fallen brethren on and thank them for doing what we all better be willing to do for our freedom. Turning, Fetch lit the pyre. Oates watched the smoke rise against a clouded, remorseless sky. He didn't thank the dead. He asked their pardon. On his right, Jackal placed a hand atop his shoulder, gave a squeeze.
"Don't say it, Jacko," Oates told him softly. "Don't tell me not to blame myself."
Jackal didn't say it, not with words. But when Oates looked at him, it was writ across his face. Fetch ordered the hoof to make ready and the bastards to gather. Things were decided quickly. Anvil would take over for Oates at the pit. With Thune and Jacintho to support her, the Smelteds could remain under hoof control. Hispartha would have to bring considerable men to push them out, and even then it would take months of tedious searching and hard fighting in the mountains. With the recruitment rides now too dangerous to continue, Thresher requested to stay with Anvil. Fetch agreed. Sluggard would return with Oates, bringing the rescued shipwrights with them. Half the mixed hoof would come as escort. The other half would go back to the mountains with Anvil, but the chief said she would have them replaced with a fresh rotation as quickly as possible. Best not to keep the mongrels who endured this battle at the forefront of the war for too long. She had Oates make the split, and he conferred with Anvil to ensure she had the best of the bunch. The farewells were hurried, and Oates soon found himself alone with Jackal and Fetching. The roque had landed on the hilltop, croaking and preening as it awaited its master. Ugfuck was still a little nervy around the great raptor, but Oates's need of the hog as a crutch supplanted his instinct to avoid the winged predator. Oates wasn't all that comfortable with the roque either, being earnest. He did his best to avoid looking into its golden, eerily perceptive eyes, each as large as one of the steel friar's bucklers. "Still think you should let Fetch take you to the Castile?" Jackal said, concern etched upon his face as he peered at the layered bandage binding Oates's chest. "All I did was close it, but that hole could open again in the saddle. Let me take Ugg for you while you fly."
"Last time I'm saying it."
"No," Oates replied. He put a smile on his face to soften the denial, but it was the third time Jackal had put the idea forth, and his patience was wearing raw.
"I ain't going up on that vulture. Not now, not ever."
Jackal tried not to, but he shot a look at Fetch. Oates set his jaw, dared her to order him.
"Ride safe," she said, and climbed up on the roque's back, though the motion was more of a jump.
Jackal looked crestfallen as he embraced Oates. "Heal up, brother."
"Thanks for saving my hide, pretty mongrel."
"What was it you told me that day in the marsh? We will until the day we don't." Releasing him, Jackal mounted up behind the chief. The roque had no saddle, a fact that made Oates shiver. He couldn't imagine being that far up with nothing but feathers to hold on to. Jackal opened his mouth. Oates cut him off. "You start the creed, and then I'm going to have to say, 'Die on the overgrown buzzard,' and that just don't sound right." Jack shut his grinning mouth. There was a span of silence.
"We'll find her, Oates," Fetching said.
"I know."
The roque turned, took a trio of increasingly lighter steps, and was in the air. Oates watched his friends ride into the sky. They were far out of reach within a single heartbeat. Chapter 8. One day in the saddle didn't kill Oates. 17 nearly did. The push through the mountains in the first week he completed out of spite, the angry coals in his skull burning away the long, rough miles through the weeping passes.
His wounds leaked in sympathy with the shrinking snow. He ignored them, sullenly suffering the bandage changes at every rest. There was little food, but he didn't have much of an appetite. Whatever was pressed into his hand, he ate without so much as a grunt of thanks to its deliverer. The fourth night, he tried to aid with the camp preparations, but was too weak to handle the hogs, too shaky to strike a fire. So he sat, motionless as a saddlebag and far less useful. Neither could he stand a watch. The cold ate into him, or maybe the warmth flowed out of him, sailing away on his escaping blood. He was forced to abandon the effort, flee back beneath a shameful pile of furs and blankets. Even with such a covering, even with Ugfuck pressed close, he shivered through each arduous night. He heard them whispering, Sluggard and Malcontent and Cutwolf. They feared he wouldn't make it, weighed the wisdom of pushing on against sheltering in one of the caves the bandits used as hideaways. Each morning, Oates made the decision for them. He was in the saddle when they awoke. He couldn't tend the barbarians, couldn't scavenge wood, couldn't hunt, couldn't even sleep. But he could ride. Well, not ride so much as grit his teeth and remain upright while Ugg did the rest. Still, he whittled away at the miles. It wasn't the mountains that almost killed him. It was the open plain. His band came down from the smelted mounts on the morning of the ninth day, leaving the cold farther behind with each step away. Cutwolf set a hard pace, knowing they could not stop for rest so near to Kalbarka. The restored city was Hisbartha's sole foothold in Ulwandulas, garrisoned by 2,000 soldiers. A quarter of that number was cavalry, and though they didn't often risk leaving the protection of their walls and guns to patrol in numbers, they did pepper the land with scouts. Should one of them catch sight of an encamped band of 10 mongrels, several clearly injured, it could bring the cavaleros out in force in hope of avenging themselves on the half-orcs who had kept them on the brink of starving all winter. Moving to cut off Kalbarka's supplies was one of the first moves Fetch made. In those first weeks of the war, she'd lacked the numbers to take the freshly fortified city, much less hold it. It had galled her to leave the frails unmolested, but her forbearance soon produced a benefit. Hisbartha kept the city resupplied using barges coming down the great Guadalquivir. Though the river was too wide to block, Fetch managed to assemble a force of wreckers and pirates to raid the shipping lane. The most heavily defended flotillas still made it through, but the goods ended up in hoof hands far more often than the bellies of Kalbarka's soldiers. In the end, supplying their own men proved of less importance to the crown than denying the pilfering sootskins, and the shipments ceased by mid-autumn. The city's garrison had suffered since. The reports from Zerko's halflings in the tunnels beneath spoke of men eating little but boiled wheat and what cats could be caught. The city still needed to be taken before Hisbartha marched an army south. Oates didn't know if Fetch would carry out her plan to attack at the end of winter, but he didn't know much of anything, isolated as he'd been these last months. Fortunately, there still hadn't been open fighting in the lots. Hisbartha's response to Fetch's declaration of war were a handful of heralds delivering threats, but no armies came south. Notch, who spent time as a scout in the Crown's armies before becoming hoofmaster of the Shards, told the chief the Frails would take the winter to muster, and, when they came in the spring, they would come with a thunder. Fetch hadn't wasted the time. While Oates and Anvil secured the smelteds and the hoard within the pit, Jackal went back east, taking the promise of that coin to the most notorious of Traedria's mercenary captains. He'd returned with ships and the freebooters to crew them, enough to protect the southern port at Mongrel's Cradle. The lots had only one other usable harbor at Ur-Sea on the eastern coast, but it was little more than a cove for smugglers. The chief decided not to split her sellsword fleet, trusting the nearby fortress of Thricehold to keep the east secure. Marrow, his thrice freed, and the bastard Slops held the citadel, training for the coming conflict. The bastard's sworn brethren were scattered among the other hoofs, giving Fetch trusted eyes and ears across the lots. Perhaps she had left the planning of Kalbarka's siege to Notch or Tomb. Oates didn't reckon she'd abandon the move, even for Zhrika. Whatever was to happen, at the moment Kalbarka remained in his Spartan hands, which meant it had to be skirted on the ride east to the Castile. No longer a slow-moving line of hogs in the rocky confines of the mountain passes, Oates's band hit the flats at a trot. He was dizzy within moments, and took his first fall before noon. Wounded pride got him remounted before the others could make much of a fuss, but the deepest cut in his arm had opened. He felt the warmth of blood welling through the pulled stitches. It wasn't long before Slug noticed and called a halt. Oates was too weak to put up much of a fight. The others sat their hogs with loaded stock bows, keeping an eye for horsemen, while Rant sewed his arm up. Her brother had taken a nasty slice to the hand during the battle on the heap, leaving her all the stitching chores. "That hurt?" Oates grunted, looking at the mottled welt above Rant's eye. She shrugged, concentrating on her work.
"Don't feel great."
"What did it?"
"Don't know," Rant chuckled. "Never saw it coming in that shit squall. Edge of a shield, maybe. Would have felt a fathom worse if it had been a blade, though, I know that. I also know the frail that did it weren't so lucky. Roar made a mess of him."
Oates tried not to focus on the unpleasant pulling of the gut string.
"Reckon he'd do that to anyone that hurts you."
"Gonna get him killed. Nearly did. So busy thrashing a man he'd already butchered, he didn't see the living one coming up on him."
"But you did."
Rand swallowed hard.
"We always look after the other."
"That's good. You're going to need that down here. A trusted brother is about the most important thing you can have."
"Sounds like you believe that."
Oates frowned.
"Why wouldn't I?"
Rant leaned and bit through the string.
"Because you're about the most solitary mongrel I ever seen. Save that ugly hog, to look at you, I'd wager you didn't care to get close to nobody and call it a keen bet."
Oates opened his mouth to respond, but found he had nothing to say. Rant stood up.
"It's a queer thing, seeing a man split from himself. Sad, too, because there ain't enough needle and gut in the world that can mend him."
"Weren't enough to keep him on his damn hog, either.
At least he didn't have to suffer the shame of the second fall. He was unconscious before he hit the ground." They'd built the fire too close. Oates was drenched when he woke. Then he saw there was no fire. None on the outside of his skin, anyway. Fat beads of sweat bubbled up from the hot pan that was his flesh. The drops slug crawled down his face, each leaving an itchy trail. Someone was knelt beside him, head bowed and mumbling, "Knuckle child." The annoyance must have made it out of Oates in a groan, for the devout rider looked up from his fistful of charms. The joy on his face, the certainty that his pleas to Hell's knew how many gods had been heard, made Oates want to die. That would show him. He regretted the thought, as the darkness granted his wish. His eyes fluttered open to the sight of huge, pendulous testicles. Ugg was dragging him on a litter. Damn improvement over Knuckles' prayers. Oates drifted in and out that day. Maybe two. The nights remained the worst. On the litter, he led the pain on a chase, but at rest, it caught him and made him pay. The stab to his rump, the cuts upon his arms, the hole through his entire fucking body, they reveled in his discomfort. All he could do now was lie like a corpse, and even that was torture. He tried not to cry out, did not want to disturb the others, bit down on his tongue. And still the whimpers escaped. Encouraged, the moans followed, with raving screams on their heels. Rant was there, her bruised face comely above him. She put a cool hand to his brow. He blinked, and she vanished. Sluggard gripped his hand, told him not to worry, that he would endure. The ragged scars on the mongrel's scalp shone angry in the firelight. more words. Knuckle Child's prayers. The others shouted him down. No, those were challenges, warnings tossed into the shadows. Voices, calmer now, discussing if he would live. They didn't bother to whisper, thinking him senseless. Movement above. Oates rolled his eyes to look. A face, small and dark. The smell of earth.
I look upon a hero, a brave warrior, perhaps at his end.
Oates knew the voice. He squinted, and the fire's glow sharpened Barsius's black features, etched with brazen swaths.
I say such a one will ride beside great Bellico, the halfling proclaimed. A proud addition to his war host, a lion among men. Do you hear his voice, lion? Do you heed his call? Tell me, from where does he speak? Where is the voice of Bellico?
With Zhrika in her head.
Barsius smiled.
Yes. Where is she?
A chill gripped Oates, sent him into a violent spasm. He'd only thought about her, hadn't he? He didn't say her name aloud. He wouldn't.
Where?
Barsius was leaning closer now, his teeth flashing and hungry. Where were the others? Why weren't they pulling him away?
Tell me where, and please the master slave. He will greet you with a feast without end, women without shame. Unburden yourself of secrets, so you may sit light upon the magnificent steed he will grant you.
Oates set his jaw. For the first time in days, his muscles responded. Reaching up, he seized Barsius by the front of his crusted robes.
No.
The halfling did not resist. His face betrayed no alarm.
You are confused. There is no need to fear. You may trust me.
Lies. But Oates could wield them too.
She's fled to the Dragonfly Islands.
His attempt only widened the halfling's smile.
We know she remains in Ulwundulas. Somewhere your chief has secreted her. Where?
Kalbarka.
No.
Up my hog's ass, then. Crawl in and look.
There is no kindness in protecting her. The hero father only wishes to help her, to relieve her of the burden she carries.
More fucking lies. Zirko didn't care a shit for Zhrika. He'd rip Bellico's tongue out of her skull if given the chance. Oates didn't know what would happen to Zhrika after that, and neither did she. But it wasn't only for her own life that she hid. Bellico was a god long kept fettered, and he wasn't pleased with those who enslaved him. Zhrika knew his wrath would be terrible should he ever get within spitting distance of Strava. The halflings and the Unyars would not celebrate their divine warlord's return. They would pay for it with their lives. Zirko knew it too, and yet still he hunted her. Still he would not leave her in peace. And here was Oates, dying on the ground with the priest's pet vulture circling. The chief was right to hide Zhrika's whereabouts. He might have told here in his last moments, too stupefied with pain and fever to help himself, too weak and vulnerable not to fall prey to Barsius's final effort to wrest the secret from him. It was the last chance for both of them. Oates couldn't tell what he didn't know. Fetch was clever, as always. But there was something he could do. He could deprive the priest of one of his hounds. He could make sure Zhrika had one less nose sniffing for her trail. Straining, Oates pulled Barsius close. The halfling began to struggle. Oates raised his other arm, got a hand around the small neck. At his best, he could have cracked the spine with a flick of his thumb, but his grip was feeble. Barsius was pulling at his fingers, about to squirm free. Oates released the halfling's robes and put his other hand over the first. He squeezed, the darkness at the edges of his sight constricting at the same pace. The effort was killing him, but not before it would kill Barsius. They could go to the hells together. Hands seized his arms, broke his hold with pathetic ease. Barsius slipped from his murdering grasp, and in the last island of sight remaining, Oates saw a woman reel back, gasping and clutching her throat. Her coughing chased him into his final dreams.
Sow's piss. That's what his mouth tasted like, welcoming him back to the world. The unpleasantness kept his eyes clenched shut for a long time. That and the light. His skull ached. So did his body, though it lay upon a cushioning bed. Not a pallet or a cot, but a bed. He could tell from the feel. Damn thing was wide, too. Oates opened his eyes in fits. They kept closing against the glare from the triple-arched window. Lead grates held diamond-shaped panes of glass smaller than a frail's hand. Oates knew that window. It was the only one like it he'd seen, an extravagance for the bedchamber of one of the most worthless men ever to draw breath, though he was good and dead now. Realizing where he lay made Oates want to flee the bed. He tried and was felled by dizziness. Closing his eyes against the spinning, the throbbing, he languished but did not sleep. The sound of the door opening encouraged him to risk the light again. The relief he felt was reflected in the face of the woman who entered.
"You back among us, Oates?" Thistle asked, setting down the washbasin on a trestle at the foot of the bed. He tried to answer, but his dry tongue delivered nothing but a click. "I need to get Hafsa," Thistle told him gently. "I won't be gone long. Stay awake." Oates nodded, and the woman hurried from the room. She wasn't gone long. Behind her came a smaller, older woman, possessing the swarthy complexion and headscarf of a Zahrasine. Oates recognized her as the woman he'd throttled, and his shame sent his heart rolling into a queasy gut. Small wonder she was escorted by two big men from her tribe. They stood aside, watchful, as the woman approached the bedside without hesitance. Thistle went back to the trestle and gave Oates a reassuring smile. A final familiar face entered last. Alamra's graceful steps brought her to stand beside and slightly behind the Zahrasine woman, who immediately began speaking in the tongue of her people.
"Hafsa asks if you know where you are,"
Alamra translated. Oates worked up enough sour spit to rattle an answer.
"Castile."
Fucking Bermudo's bedchamber, to be more exact, but that was pushing his voice to limits it didn't possess. Hafsa spoke again, directly to him, her face placid and eyes sharp.
"Do you feel you can take some water?" Alamra asked.
Oates nodded. After a permissive nod from Hafsa, Thistle came around to the other side of the bed with a cup and helped Oates lift his head to drink. It washed away some of the sow's piss, but turned his stomach into a churning sack of eels. He wasn't allowed a second mouthful. Hells, he was feeling worse with each passing moment, the pain and weakness waking with him.
"Do you have any numbness?"
Alamra asked, after further words from Hafsa. Oates started to shake his head, but stopped as the question forced him to consider.
"Right. Arm. Foot."
His answer caused him more alarm than any of the women. Hafsa said something that Thistle must have understood, for it was she who spoke to Oates, not Alamra.
"We need to change your bedding now, Oates. Get you clean."
It was only then that Oates realized he'd soiled the linens. The embarrassment nearly cut through the pain. Alamra absented the room while Hafsa directed the Zahrasin men. Didn't seem like they needed to be told what to do, as they shifted Oats onto his side with practiced ease and held him there while the bedding was stripped. Thistle took a wet rag to him like some damn babe. His tenders worked quickly, but it was still an eternity. Oats wanted to rage, to throw them off, to drive them from the room with shouts and heaved furniture, but all he could do was suffer the indignity and try not to add to it by letting loose the building tears. Once he was bathed and resettled, Hafsa saw to his injuries, removing the bandages to scrutinize each wound with judging eyes, sniffing nose, and carefully probing fingers. Oats was rolled onto his side once more so she could tend his rump and the hole in his back. Salves were applied that stung something awful. Hafsa replaced his bandages with some assistance from Thistle, though her involvement had the look of tutelage, not necessity. At last, it was over. Hafsa called Alamra back in and gave her a swift string of instruction before leaving the room, the men at her heels.
"She says you are to sleep, if able," Alamra related.
"How long?"
"More would be better than less, I think."
Oates shook his head. He tried to repeat the question, but his parched throat thwarted him. Thistle came to his rescue with water and understanding.
"How long have you been here?"
Oates grunted what he hoped was an affirmative as he sipped.
4 days,
Thistle said, doling the water with care.
"How bad?"
The question brought a compassionate twist to the blonde woman's mouth.
"Some of your wounds were festered. You had blood fever. It was close, Oats."
He held Thistle's steady, caring gaze. She'd put on weight since last he'd seen her, looked more like herself.
"But you are going to be fine," she added. "Hafsa's a marvel."
The mention of the Zahrasin woman made Oats wince. He rolled his head to look at Alamra.
"Tell her I'm sorry."
He made a choking gesture at his own throat.
"She was not harmed,"
Alamra told him, placing a hand on his forearm. If she were lying, Oats couldn't tell, but that was the manner of this small woman with just a drop of orc blood. She was artful. Like her orc heritage, she could conceal a thing to the point that it didn't exist and still use it to her advantage.
"You were out of your head, Oats," Thistle put in, pardoning him.
"Tell her, please,"
he told Alamra. She dipped her chin.
"I will. Now you should sleep."
"Rather eat," Oates said.
He wasn't hungry, but it seemed queer that he wasn't after 4 days. Besides, he was never going to get out of this bed if he didn't put some food in him. Hafsa may be a marvel, but Beryl was a terror, and Oates knew well what his mother's requirements would be if she were here.
"Honey only,"
Alamra said, though the words were a reminder for Thistle.
"I heard, Rue."
Alamra smiled.
"Your Urjar is improving."
"Got a good tutor," Thistle replied with a wink. Alamra removed her hand from Oates's arm, but he managed to catch it again before she could turn to leave.
"Any word from the chief?"
"No."